Sorry to hold you.
Things started off quick. We ready?
We're good.
All right. Steve, can you take roll, please?
John Whitman.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Ruben.
Here.
Tom Dodge.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Rossini.
Here.
Wayne Sazel.
Here.
Lieutenant Puckett.
Here.
Myself. And I understand Eric and Richard are en route, so we would have a full group.
Okay. I should have prefaced it saying this is the meeting for February 12th for the Law Enforcement Advisory Committee. Before we go to public comment, I just want to recognize Mike Felix. He was a LEAC member from the inception, served 3 years. His term came up in January. He made the decision to not renew. He will be greatly missed. He added a lot of advice and counsel to our group, and he's a very valuable member. Totally understand his reasons, but I just wanted to recognize his efforts and how much he meant to what we've been doing here. So with that, we'll move on to public comment. I think we have a few members of the public here, so the forum is yours. You guys would like to introduce yourself, and if you have anything you'd like to bring up or just listen in.
I'm Nicole Jones. I am this year's PFSO president of the high school. At our city schools meeting earlier this year, we discussed a lot of the problems that have been occurring here in the center with early release days at the high school, late start days with the middle schoolers. At the time, it was suggested that I come and, you know, talk about some of those concerns here. Unfortunately, I was unable to make the November meeting. Since then, we've had yet another city schools meeting and discussed the ways in which the business community here in the center has been a little more proactive, taking pictures of the students and forwarding them to the school instead of confronting the students directly. That has been effective. You know, the students have had discipline, you know, at their home school, whether it's Saravilla or the high school. So handling it that way, but also just wanted to let you know, both law enforcement and LEAC as a committee, that the parent groups at all the schools, I can speak for all of them, are here for you. Anything you need, if you'd like us to get word out to our parents. A couple years ago, our newsletters only went to parent members. So we've got different organizations, BPE's Home and School League, Serrano's PFO, Serrano and the high school PFSO. But they only used to go out to members. As of year before last, now the newsletters go out to every single parent at every single school. So we have a pretty good reach as far as the parents, you know, who attend these schools. So if there's any word at all that you want us to get out to those parents, we would be happy to do that and partner with you in any way we can. One thing that came out at our last meeting is Ed Howard has been working very closely with both the school board and Lisa Ogan at Saravilla, trying to switch Saravilla from late start to early release. We feel it would be more respectful to the parents and their schedules. A lot of our parents work and, you know, just basically drop off here in the center because they have to go to work. A lot of them have elementary school students that they have to pick up 12:15 on the same day. So it's just very difficult for working parents to juggle that sort of routine, a 9:30 drop-off with a 12:15 pickup. So we're hoping by getting everyone on the same page on Wednesdays that it will kind of alleviate some of that here at the center, since it's easier to get kids home than it is to try and get the message out to parents to, you know, just keep their kids home till 9:30. So yeah, that's kind of what I had to say.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone have any questions? I'd just like to say thank you. You know, I know it's been an issue with some of the merchants around here, and I know that, you know, sheriff's department's had to deal with it. So anything you can do on your end for, you know, outreach on your end with the parents and everything else is greatly appreciated. So thank you.
And we're trying to get the word out.
Didn't we make an effort with one of our deputies very took charge of this thing on his own volition and talked to the kids and went to the school, and they said they would provide a room, a study room, and assign a teacher.
Yes, Mrs. Ogan. Yeah, we worked together last year, Officer Benzie, Mrs. Ogan, and I. Yes, I was PFSO president over at Saravilla last year, and so we set that up last year to where there is supervision for the students, but it's just been very difficult to get the parents to drop them off at the school. Yeah. The kids think it's cool and, you know, fun to be here, you know, as opposed to at school, you know, sitting and doing their work.
Can't blame them, can you? I mean, if you were their age.
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, we're...
It's been a hard sell.
Well, thank you for your effort. We appreciate parents that take charge and are concerned.
Well, we don't want to have any problems with
the
businesses and the neighbors, yeah.
And our poor merchants...
Yeah,
it's tough for them to enforce. There's been retaliation by the students in some cases, and it's really tough. And I thought Benzie did a fine job of kind of calming the thing down and winning the trust of the kids. But the parents are the problem then again, aren't they? Well, I don't know what we can do.
Okay, any more public comment at all?
So we have a problem at my the intersection to my school, which is Villa Park Elementary. I'm Jim Griswold.
Hi, Jim.
Hey. So, Villa Park Road and Center Street. So, if you go southbound on Center from Villa Park Road, the intersection oftentimes is, there's many vehicles that stack up and they block the intersection. And so, when my wife walks with my kids, there's vehicles that go around those cars, right? So, their line of sight is very poor. And often, on multiple occasions, like, she's had to pull the kids back because they're about to get hit. So, like, we're really fed up with that intersection. And we've had deputies go out there, and yeah, when the deputies are there, everybody's an angel, right? But they can't post there 24/7, or at least during these times every day. So that's when the problems revert back again. People just will stop right into the intersection when they go northbound from the school going up, and they'll be right in the crosswalk. And people just don't pay attention.
I'm trying to get my head wrapped around this. So north and southbound traffic on Center.
Right. So just think like if you're going to school that day,
right,
you have two areas of travel. One, people are stacked up on the line, which from the school goes all the way back to Villa Park Road, and they're right in turn lane. And then also you have people who have dropped off and they're trying to leave. Or if you reverse it, you know, pick it up and leave. And in either direction, on both sides, you have issues.
Mm-hmm. Plus they're making a left-hand turn. Most of them making a left-hand turn coming out of the elementary school.
Heading northbound to head back up to Villa Park Road.
Right.
Okay, so where your wife had the issues, is that trying to cross cross Center Street along Villa Park Road then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
East-west.
East-west, okay.
I can add to that, most of the time when I come through there, and I do walk in the neighborhood, there's anywhere from 3 to 6 cars parked on the east side of Center, right below the no parking sign, and there's nobody in them. So they're parked, they're not waiting.
Okay, so the issue is cars being stopped in the crosswalks, cars being out in the middle of the intersections, because if they keep the crosswalk clear, I'm assuming this would solve the issue, right? So is that...
Well, yeah, but like my kids, my oldest one rides his bike, right? Mm-hmm. So it's either, if they're not paying attention, they run right into the intersection. It happens probably daily, I would imagine. So something needs to be done with everybody always running through that intersection, and they'll just stop. If you have the lines there going east-west, they'll be right in the middle of it. And they're talking, they want their kid, whatever you want to fill in the blank, but they keep running through it. Mm-hmm. And then the second issue is the stacking of the cars and people making that right-hand turn. And there's people who actually block.
So right-hand turn going from
you're going
eastbound Villa Park Road
eastbound
on to
south.
Southbound?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That creates another problem, too. That intersection, because of the walls that are built there, is basically a blind intersection. And with the cars there, you cannot see traffic coming.
It's tough. I mean, Nicole, since my kids started kindergarten there, we've had the same problem.
Yeah.
It's always been there. And they have listened to our input, not just from the LEAC, but in general. And they have put people out there. They put cones up to keep all the cars off to the right. I mean, that created some order on the street. But as we were told, I think by the district, these schools weren't built for commuter traffic. They were originally built for kids
Correct.
That walked to school, like what we did when we were young.
Plus the buses they used to use.
Yeah, I was bused.
And and so there's not a lot they can do. You know, if they could use eminent domain and cut out some take some houses and, you know, widen the streets and make turn lanes and stuff. I mean, that's one thing, but that's, you know, that's a multi-year process and expensive and maybe a battle we don't really need to do.
There is another way.
Yeah.
The upper edge of that ground, if they move those backstops down a little bit, they could build a driveway around the back of the school. And that would take a lot of the traffic off of the center.
Well, we've talked about that one over off Serrano as well.
And yeah.
I mean, that's, unless the school district wants to take that initiative, it's which they tend to not want to take that initiative, then we're in a tough spot.
It sounds like enforcement is the short-term option that is most...
Phasing of traffic signals, if there was one side that stayed, you know, green for longer periods of time, would that, you know, would that help the issue at all, or...
When was the last time Akron was done?
By any chance, are you in law enforcement or fire service?
Here.
Law enforcement? Can I ask what agency? I really appreciate the haircut, by the way. Your uniform appearance is top-notch. Listen, as we talk about enforcement, I'm just going to jump right into it, and I'm going to acquaint everybody to what we're dealing with here, because there are some solutions to what you're talking about, but enforcement is not the only option, simply because there are no deputies to do that. There's only one deputy in this city at any given time. Is that a whiteboard behind this little thing right here?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Traffic count in there.
A year and a half ago.
Okay.
All right. Very happy you're here tonight, because maybe you can help us with this. So I'm going to equate the room with the Sheriff's Department contract so that you know what we have to deal with law enforcement-wise. So the city right now pays for four deputies, right? One on at any given time. One deputy for your city. So you have days, you have midnights, right? You get one deputy, one deputy, one deputy, one deputy. So at any given time, you have one deputy in the city, right? Now the city wants an SRO at the schools, and so we take your one deputy and we move that deputy over here to SRO. So now you have three full-time deputies. We bring in what we call the deputy of the day for all of the blanks that are in the schedule, right? So when we talk about traffic enforcement, one of the issues that we have was the deputies that come to the city come from unincorporated areas of the county where we don't have traffic enforcement. The Highway Patrol does a traffic enforcement. So we identified a pretty serious issue 2 weeks ago with some of the traffic enforcement in the city because none of our deputies were radar or LIDAR trained. So they just went through that. But we still have a significant gap where three of the deputies that come in from unincorporated and they're not traffic trained. That is not going to change, okay? Because I can't train 44 other deputies that come in to backfill the blanks in the city on radar and LIDAR, right? So one of the things that we look at is how can we start helping with some of the traffic enforcement issues in the city? Because that's not our primary goal. Our primary goal is public safety, which I'm proud to announce that crime is down 19% in this city from the previous year. Traffic enforcement, what we're going to be looking at is the moving violations. And I think around the school this would equate pretty important because we don't want a kid to get hit by a car, obviously. The issue is I can't say that you're going to have a deputy out there every single day because if you only have one deputy and they go out on a call for service, there's no one there for traffic enforcement. What I can tell you is they can be in areas doing traffic enforcement when they're not on a call, but I can't guarantee that that's going to be every single day at this hour. Does that make sense to everybody in the room? Okay. So with that, one of the things that we've talked about is with the three deputies that are going to be radar trained, we're going to go zero tolerance across the city. And the reason that we're going to do that is because the number of traffic collisions has exceeded the point where I feel comfortable and now it's a threat to public safety. So what I can assure you is the three deputies that are radar trained will target specifically the major thoroughways in the city and the areas by the schools to help get our traffic collision index down to what I would consider more of an acceptable level, which is under 20%. Now I can assure you I am not a traffic expert, but there are some areas that obviously we can have some improvement, this being one of them. But I think one thing that may help with this particular problem is if we can reach out to the schools and come up with, like what we talked about before, a better traffic plan, because I know a lot of schools in different areas will have more crossing guards out there, the school officials will come out and help with different coning off, moving the cars in a better flow plan, and maybe that will get us to where we need to be. I bring that up because I can tell you enforcement alone is not going to solve that issue, simply because there isn't the manpower in the city to do that. So what I'll do is tomorrow morning I'll have our SRO reach out to the principal and see if we can start coming up with a traffic plan to hopefully alleviate some of those concerns, if that helps you at all.
Well, I think you need to keep in mind that we have four principals that have the exact same complaints And I hear the exact same concern from parents in all four schools, I think. Nicole, you could say anything about Taft Avenue. Serrano is a nightmare. And CV and Serrano are kind of a nightmare together in just different parts of the street. So I think, candidly, that's one of the issues is you have, even if we were to have a deputy, and I have somebody at Serrano who is screaming right now for, if you go on Facebook, you can read all about it, about how we need another stop sign at Serrano and Featherhill. The problem is the traffic counts, just like the traffic counts and the walking counts. There's state standards about what we should have, and they don't warrant it. So that's sort of the problem you're going to get into. I mean, there is a, you know, and if you put a stop sign and no one enforces it, you might as well not put a stop sign up because you've got people blowing by intersections, et cetera.
Come on in, Rich.
So I want to make sure that you guys kind of realize that I get the same concerns about Santiago and Serrano, and I get the same concerns about Taft Avenue. In fact, we are working with the high school right now. I think Nicole was here about the drop-off at the high school because the proposal right now would create even a bigger problem on Taft. So we're having to deal with that issue right now with the new science center. They're going to be shortening the drop-off. So we are having a discussion with them about how that's not acceptable, and they've got other options and things that we've proposed, etc. So it's a challenge, and it's four schools in the district, one deputy. So I would concur that it's not going to be enforcement. Now, one of the suggestions I think that came up, and you probably fill in.
Yeah, if I could just add, I have a child still at Villa Park Elementary. I've got three schools this year.
But congratulations.
I really do think that it was a lot better when we had a crossing guard there. The crossing guard really seemed to keep the cars out of the intersection. It really flowed so much better when we had the crossing guard.
When did they have a crossing guard?
Oh, yeah.
No, when?
Well, most of the time. We haven't had her for what? Because it was Ruth. We gave balloons.
What's the intersection you're talking about?
At Center and Villa Park Road. We had a crossing guard there for years.
On the south side, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, she worked three sides of the intersection.
Always. And really, I mean, having her there was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I understand it's not in the budget. And, you know, one of the council members a couple years ago when I first complained about this said, you know, well, it costs us thousands and thousands of dollars, we don't have it. But it was very helpful having her there. It really kept the cars out of the intersection. We still have problems. I mean, a friend of mine, you know, has a hip with a bunch of pins in it because she was hit at that intersection. Yeah. You know, Gail Douglas was struck in that intersection. You know, it's been a problem.
If I can add on to that, one of my many responsibilities is I manage the crossing guard contract for the county. So I have 57 different crossing guard sites to worry about. And Villa Park actually uses, they piggyback on to our contract with that. And I can tell you, I have found better experience when the school administrators actually come out to assist with crossing guard services than when we actually use the crossing guard company. We've had so many problems with this crossing guard company that we're looking to revoke their contract and bring in a different company. So maybe this is a conversation with the schools, because if any type of management of the intersection is going to be preferred, but maybe with the schools, especially since you're involved with them a little bit more than we certainly are.
Well, we could maybe talk about volunteers. I know Serrano uses volunteers for their parking lot flow.
Right.
The principal won't put teachers out on the street. Mm-hmm. They just said it's too much liability. If something were to happen, it exposes the district to having the teachers out there controlling traffic. So I was one of the ones out there in a Dayglo vest, you know, trying to get the parents to be directed, but after a while, you know, it's a very tough position to be in. It's high confrontation, you know, when, you know, there's no left turn into the VPE parking lot in the morning. But when it's a parent telling another parent, you can't turn left, you just get yelled at. So we just don't get a lot of parent volunteers that are willing to do that.
So one of the things that I enjoy about this committee is there's a solution here that we can figure out together. Maybe we won't come up with it tonight, but this committee is absolutely essential to keeping the crime rates low in the city, because there's only so much money in the contract, and so we have to manage it appropriately. But it's through this volunteerism and this community involvement that I think is where the answer is going to lay. So even if it's confrontational, there's still something we can do there. It's just not going to all 100% fall on the backs of the Orange County Sheriff's Department, because unfortunately the one deputy that you have on, their primary duty is going to be the preservation of life and safety. Yeah. So
Well, 5 years ago, Villa Park Elementary totally rejiggered the traffic flow around our school.
Right.
I don't, those of you who remember, we used to allow parking on
right.
Center directly in front of the school, which meant that the drop-off traffic blocked the road. And so turning that whole lane into a pull-through lane only
mm-hmm.
really helped, because that frees that whole lane for the parents that go and then they can drop off in the rear parking lot or, you know, get through to their homes, you know, so that was very helpful. So we did make that change. And, you know, has made a tremendous improvement, in my opinion,
oh,
versus
definitely.
When I first started at VPE and you'd just be dead stopped in the middle of the street until the parents got through to drop off their child.
Right.
So.
You know, I'll tell you somewhere where it works very well is, have you ever been to Santiago Middle School in the mornings?
Mm-hmm.
The principal is out there.
Over there, yes.
Right.
And he is in the intersection, and he'll go to the middle of the intersection and he'll hold everybody up so that they can cross all over. And I got it. I mean, I wave at the guy every time I go by and see him, you know, whenever I'm over that way. That works really well. And because he's the principal, it carries a little more weight because all the parents know him, the kids know him,
yeah.
right? Consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you what, I think that is pretty awesome.
I don't think he's going to want to walk all the way down. And assuming the principal down there wanted to get involved like that, I don't know if he's going to want to come down to the crosswalk at Center in Villa Park. So
I hear you.
So I guess we can, you know, we have a standing agenda on our meetings for crime prevention and traffic safety. I mean, I guess if, you know, you want to do some outreach with VP based on our, you know, our resident complaint here that we have, maybe we can get the engineer to look at the phasing of the signals. If there's anything that possibly we can do in the short term.
Actually, they are phased by Caltrans. Will phase the whole street, Catella, Orange. It goes through unincorporated county. It goes through, so it's all being synchronized, and we
right.
have very little say so. Unfortunately, when that gets synchronized through those multiple entities.
So behind the scenes, let's see what we can do, and then we'll revisit this in a couple months, and hopefully we'll see some improvement. I don't know what else.
So just to sum up, sounds like a multi-prong attack on this. I totally agree with the lieutenant. There's only so many hours and so much, and only one place at a time a deputy can be, and there's four schools, as Steve suggested. The other thing that I mentioned prior to you bringing up the topic about crossing guards was a traffic count by our engineer. Sounds like we did one about a year and a half for a better understanding of how things go. So if Deputy Benzie reaches out to the school, that's going to help out. If the principal gets, and I'm sure that you know, they're actively involved, but really in touch with that and perhaps take a new look at things. Maybe things have changed. Maybe there's a little bit higher traffic. Maybe people aren't working a plan well with others, don't know. And then if you could reach out, maybe we could potentially get a solution here. So,
Tom, go ahead. Can you get pick up Tom? He'll go ahead, Tom. You tell the story. You live down
there. I lived down there. I have
45 years.
Long time.
A little bit.
I remember crossing guards there. I'm kind of rehashing an old issue that we've gone through before, but why can't the PSRs do something? Even just the presence might have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm close enough to Villa Park Elementary, I can put on my uniform and walk up there. So I wouldn't be adding to the parking problem. Plus, people, the parents park anywhere they can. Including, I've seen them parked up on the red curb there at the upper part of that stretch of center. Not to mention the ones I've
seen.
I would
just caution that anytime you rely, even the PSRs, it's 5 days a week, guys.
I know.
It's a pretty rigorous schedule.
Right.
But even if we show up on a random basis.
Twice a day, morning and afternoon. So that's a lot of. It's pretty bad. So the PSRs, you've pretty much disabled the PSRs for doing other things. If you do that one intersection, you'll monopolize. So that's kind of, I worry a little bit about just volunteers are a challenge in that regard because you can't really say, if you don't show up.
We've already volunteered with the Sheriff's Department. Just the Sheriff's Department has to decide whether they want to use this for that kind of a thing or not. And I'm not talking about writing citations.
Thank you.
Pardon?
We do not, but thank you. there's too much liability. If you want to volunteer outside of the sheriff's department, by all means, but when you're wearing the sheriff's department emblem and we're faced with confrontation, now I put you in a spot in enforcement, which is completely outside the scope of the PSR round. And we're going to talk about this later on when it comes back to the issuing of parking citations for PSR. I can assure you the sheriff's department will not budge on this. San Clemente has had this program in place. There have been issues with it. The PSRs are put into danger. Your life, your well-being is of my primary concern, as well as with the other PSRs, and I will not put you in an enforcement capacity. Sorry.
I would agree with you from personal experience. Yeah. I think that would be a mistake to put the PSR.
Well, let's not jump ahead. So
I have to speak. I'm sorry, John, but this 3 years has been brewing with an issue that's been misunderstood by people right here in this room. We had a motion that we presented to City Council to force somehow get the school district to face the fact that they had to provide off-street drop-off and pick-up zones. The problems we have now are that those are lacking in the schools mentioned. And so we were frustrated 3 years ago, 4 years ago, by this problem, which Tom and I have seen for years. In fact, we had a traffic survey, Dennis from Orange. I'm sorry, I had his name a few minutes, a second ago. He's now retired. Okay. He came down and assessed it, and we had people there counting cars and all that. That was at Villa Park Elementary. Anyway, we've studied this situation for years, and that's why I said, let's sue the school district. And of course, that was caused a lot of repercussion. But you see, the reason I'm so adamant about this is because I was on city council when two children were killed on Taft Avenue, mm-hmm. about 4 months apart. And I suffered through the time, at the time, our city council would not put a signal on at Nichols, because it would have been the only signal in the city that was not on the edge of the city. And they felt it was a political issue. So we finally convinced them to do it, but there was a backlog on the big arms that hold the signal out over the street. And they just simply couldn't manufacture them fast enough. So we didn't, fortunately, have any more, but we narrowed it down to single lane, both ways past the school. I've been into this emotionally when you've got a neighbor two doors from me who lost his 9-year-old son. It's horrendous. And I feel the schools have to do something. They wanted to consolidate all these neighborhood schools into mega schools, and they don't have a traffic pattern to absorb it. It's a policy issue that the school district hasn't addressed. And it's cost us a couple of kids years ago.
Not only that, they keep closing schools and concentrating that student body in Villa Park schools.
Well, by choice. The kids have free open choice because they're all Title I schools. But this issue has gone on for many years. But I feel it's incumbent on our schools to provide off-street drop-off zones. And if you look around the Orange, a whole area of the district, we are the only ones that I've noticed that don't have a drop-off zone off the street. And our streets are single lane. So we desperately need that. And it's like you just mentioned about the curb along center, that you got rid of the parking, we did that. And that really helped. And on Serrano, we couldn't even get an emergency vehicle down there until this committee urged them to reorganize the parking. You followed that one. And so here's our situation. We haven't got the money to have two guards. The city doesn't have the funds for that. The school district has kind of taken a blind eye. I'm sorry if it sounds awful to say that, but that's the way it... not the school.
Yeah, no, but I've got just something to add about the district. Ann Truax, who is the assistant director of primary education over there, and right now she's interim assistant superintendent, was very responsive when they closed Silverado Elementary.
Yes.
They were looking to place students and moving them around to different schools. Villa Park Elementary technically had three free classrooms. We were using one for ROP, Another one was overflow for our library, and another one was used for storage. And they were going to move almost 100 students to Villa Park Elementary on top of what we already had. And myself and another parent from the Home and School League went to Ann. We laid out all the numbers, the acreage of the elementary schools, the enrollment of the elementary schools, and made the case that we just could not support it for traffic, for, you know, just sheer space. We are the smallest campus of all the elementary schools in OUSD. We're only 10 acres. We gave her all these reasons, and they took three portables off our campus and moved them to Olive Elementary for those students. So, you know, the district is willing to work with us. If we, you know, go to them and we make our case, they are really willing to work with us. And especially with dropping enrollment in the district, there is room to kind of maybe move some of these students around. Yeah, no, they
have been very responsive. You think our city council members should meet with them jointly to help this issue?
I think they'd be great, especially Gunn-Marie Hansen, the new superintendent, is very receptive and really is open to meeting with community leaders. I think it would go really well.
There's another alternative, so I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
I feel like I've been unfairly attacked because they didn't ask me why I was so adamant about this issue.
Well, it's like I said, we're beating a dead horse. So then certainly the school district needs to, but obviously our role as a committee is you know, we can only control what we can control, and that's what we can do as a city.
I met with the superintendent this week. I met with the planning, and they are moving forward on Taft, and that's a block. They're only willing to do so much. They are listening. They'll listen, great. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a problem. They're literally going to transfer a problem from their campus to the street. And that's good. We're going to be having the same conversation about Taft.
And I think there was a lot of short-sighted stuff that was done when they did the bond measure, because I think if they wanted to get Villa Park residents on board, if they would have made a facet of that had to do with alleviating traffic and putting in some drop-off areas in our schools, that you would have probably seen a lot more support for that bond measure. But that's off tangent. But
I think that candidly, there's a lot of it's like multiple discussions we have to have. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. It's the same discussion I have on four different schools.
And yeah.
Nicole, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they all have the same, all have the same issues.
And they're just as passionate, and they just have the same, they do. It's the school district has, they listen, and the next time you meet with them, they come back to the same plan that we started with. And you're like, okay, no, we didn't make any progress there. But I think you're right. We need to continue with them. I think candidly, it is a multiple faceted. It's also parents too. It's like parking. You know, I mean, you can get on enforcement, but I mean, if a deputy solves a problem and a deputy's there and then it reappears the next day, that's a parental decision, guys. That's mm-hmm. not an enforcement decision. That's somebody deciding, I'm going to do this because no one's watching today.
Mm-hmm. And we get a
that's we, really kind of what you're talking
parents
about.
Every year. So,
but I mean, part of it is like, you know, if you the deputy's out there and he's making a difference. Then the next day, the deputy's not there, and you see the same problem. I got the same problem. They're parking here. Well, you know what? Somebody knows the deputy's not there that day, and he doesn't see a black and white, and they pull in, they stop, and they do whatever they're not supposed to. So there's some parental, cultural, or behavioral issues we've got to deal with. I think you're right, and that's what we need to communicate to them. It's the same issue we have dropping the kids off in town center.
Well, I tell you what, I'm totally against red light cameras and all that kind of stuff, but that almost would be like one area where if you could, you know, get some cameras up and some video enforcement of something. And I know a lot of cities are going away from that. I'm not even suggesting that, but, you know, but for cities that have a low amount of manpower, that, you know, technology is certainly something we can maybe look at that might help alleviate something. I don't know.
Education. I think that was actually considered unconstitutional. Santa Ana had to take theirs out over the last couple of years, correct?
Well, when the city council member gets a ticket swearing day, I think that helps.
That doesn't help.
I think there's still some cities that are doing it.
Very few. I know Red Flex had a problem with some corruption in Chicago, but I think they kind of overcame that.
I just think it's education, not enforcement. Enforcement creates, you got to get the triangle working together, the parent, the child, and the school district. And if the school district, the teachers, or the principal would educate in the orientation session every fall, hey, we have a traffic issue here that you've got to cooperate with. We don't want a kid to get hit.
What about something like, I've seen some of the crosswalks are in areas that have flashing bot dots. Now, you know, that's going to bring attention to the crosswalks. If cars are stopping in the middle of a crosswalk, you know, something like a flashing bot dot or something like that might be enough to, you know, sometimes people are just, you know, they're in a rush in the morning. They may not even realize they're in the crosswalk. I don't know.
Reduce our liability.
Yeah. I mean, it just, I'm trying to think of something that's going to raise an awareness to, you know, the crosswalks, the intersections, and trying to keep those areas clear. I mean, it's probably not going to stop people making the turns and with the blocked views and things like that, but I don't know. Let's see what we can do through some outreach and I don't know if PSRs are going to be an issue. This has been something we've been trying to tackle since the inception of this committee, and we have not been successful doing it. You know, through restriping and everything else, it's a simple thing. Like Jay said, these are schools that were meant, that were designed to have foot traffic to them, not vehicle traffic. And doesn't mean we can't solve the issue. It's just gonna, if we're not getting support from the school district, and if they're not willing to make drop off and pick up areas on their grounds, then it's gonna be a hard thing. The only way you're gonna solve is getting cars off the street, and we're having a hard time getting that solved.
We have no jurisdiction over the schools.
Right. So.
Well, another thing I would offer too is if you go down Santiago at Serrano, there is a school district crosswalk, right? That traffic is no better, and that is no safer an intersection. I go every morning there. I would not let my child go through that intersection. Mm-hmm. I don't care if the school crosswalk mm-hmm. there or not.
Yeah.
That is not any, but they do have somebody there. He's there mm-hmm. every morning, religiously. The guy's rain or shine, he's there.
All right.
I'll give, you know.
Well, it sounds like a great suggestion is having a crossing guard. How do we get crossing guards? I don't know. I have no idea. But, you know, it'd be nice to have some volunteers in this city that might be willing to do something like that. So that seemed to work at one point.
Back to the liability issue. And under OES, they have to be covered by workers' comp.
No, I'm not talking for PSRs. I'm talking
to someone. No, I'm talking about anybody that volunteers with a municipal function. City of Villa Park, school district, whatever. Mm-hmm. OES says they have to be covered by workers' comp. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's move on. So let's go through and look at the minutes from the November meeting and approve those.
Suing the school district.
Absolutely.
That was false news.
Fake
news.
No, that's true. We talked about it.
But we never recommended it.
But you guys said no. But it still went into it. Somehow it got worded.
It was misreported.
Yeah. By a former city manager. Thank you for straightening that.
Through passion and.
Well, I lost two kids on my watch. I was called a murderer by the whole bunch of kids with torches, came up and through the city hall with candles and crying. And
I don't see any issues with minutes, John.
It's terrible.
Anybody have any objections?
Anyone want to make a motion to approve minutes from the November meeting?
I'll move.
Anyone second?
I'll second.
I would do it, except I wasn't here for it, so.
All in favor of approving, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? They passed there, Steve. Okay. So let's move on to our regular business items. Committee restructuring. Steve, I assume you can tackle that one
real quick. It's two things. You already mentioned Mike Felix is no longer with us voluntarily. Choosing not to participate for now because of other commitments. But I also going to mention that the council approved the restructuring of the Community Development Public Safety Committee to remove public safety and create a separate public safety committee. So there'll be a public safety committee that works with this group, I assume. So that's just a FYI. I don't think it means a lot different for you guys or anything here, but it's just thinking about what's happening there. So that's it.
Okay. All right. So moving on, item B, Nixel. So this was on the agenda from our November meeting. Councilman Rossini had given an overview. There was a $3,000 cost. We discussed and decided to research further specific compatibility with OCSD efforts and whether cities might be using it, and we re-agendized it for tonight. So
we've done research with our interns. There are no OCSD cities. They don't use it. So there are cities that use it, that they all have their own police departments. So the sheriff's department does not use Nixel. They use their own system of
OC Alert.
Yeah, Alert OC, or whatever. I think it's Alert OC. Yeah. So I just offer that. It's $3,000 is what it would be. The people who have it say the same thing about the people who have Alert OC. They like some of the features. A little more informal than Alert OC is. But that's just, and that's an administrative issue. That's not a system issue, really. So I just followed up at the request of it. So that's where we are.
Yeah, I actually brought the topic up about Nixel just as another vehicle to potentially get the word out and take a look at things. But given the fact that there is a $3,000 cost that is duplicative, a large part of what the sheriff's department's Alert OC does, I think we'd rather keep that money, my personal opinion, going towards other projects, maybe a crossing guard if that would work. I'm not sure that that's in the budget, but, you know, I mean, I think that's a decision that needs to be researched further, and I obviously appreciate the effort that you did on that and that the interns did.
So that notification system was only going to be if there was actually an incident of some sort, or would it be kind of like Alert OC would be then?
It's very much like Alert, like Alert OC's system is, candidly.
Okay.
They do a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say, they use it different ways that are more informal.
Right.
That's the best way to say it. It's not, you know.
Now another tool avenue too. I know Nextdoor is getting a lot of play, and I don't know if we have a city rep or anything like that to get word out to residents through maybe the Nextdoor app of things that are going on in the city or things that they might need to be aware of. But that might be an avenue of having a tool to use that doesn't cost the city anything, you know. And if there's an actual incident, we got Alert OC to let you know the residents know how to prepare or what to look for.
Nextdoor is not confined by Villa Park zip codes, so
okay.
Keep in mind that's like you could have someone from Anaheim Hills providing information.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the issues we've had with that is you've had people outside things put.
And you think it's a Villa Park resident, but it's not really a Villa Park resident.
We now have two.
Okay.
Somebody over on Adams Ranch Road has started up a new one.
Okay, so that's a that's the only thing different. But getting information out, we want to push things out, so we're going to be more aggressive in the city anyway. But information type.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, so we'll move on from the Nixel. I mean, it's probably a good idea, but it sounds like it's probably cost prohibitive and probably not kind of a duplication of service.
Well, Nixel is owned, I believe, just bought out OC Alert.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I think so.
Hmm.
So well, I know.
Kind of a moot point then.
Yeah.
I think. Is my understanding. I may be wrong, but I thought that
Alert OC is used through Nixel.
Right.
So that's the platform that it's used. No cities use that, and we researched how Phillip Park could use it, but there still would be a charge because right now it just comes out from the Emergency Management Division. So there's no ability for a city to piggyback onto that platform. It goes back to they'd have to buy their own platform to use it.
Okay, so we'll move on to item C, Taking Back Our Community Coalition. This was something that I had proposed for the agenda on November 20th at meeting. Basically, this coalition is a coalition made up of primarily LA County cities, but I understand now they're up to 30 cities between LA and Riverside counties. But basically, it's an outreach effort for them. The cities are contributing at least one staff member to this committee and coalition. And it's basically to work with the state and try to come up with solutions on ways to mitigate the negative effects that have arisen related to increase in crime related to Propositions 47, 57, and AB 109. So one of the things we did is we tabled this for today, and we asked some of the members of the committee here to reach out to some of the cities that are part of the coalition to see if they've, you know, what their thoughts are about the committee, if they've seen any benefits, what their overall thoughts of it were. I'll just speak on my own. I did reach out to the cities of Whittier and Glendora. Obviously, Whittier is very passionate about this because, as you guys recall, they had two officers that were killed in the line of duty fairly recently. And it was a parolee that was primarily freed up because of some of these legislative changes. So they're very passionate about this. City of Glendora as well. One of the things they're trying to do is there's a ballot measure they're trying to look at is called Reducing Crime and Keeping California Safe Act of 2018. This is something they hope to get on the ballot. And a lot of what it's going to do is try to reclassify some of the crimes, some of the dollar amounts that, you know, they moved, you know, shoplifting up to 900, maybe scaling some of those numbers back to create felonies again. So it's not going to necessarily overturn some of these measures, but try to reduce the effect they have on the increase in crime. So the negatives for the city of Villa Park is obviously there's a cost factor of $1,500 a year. There's a expectation from the coalition that the city is going to at least, you know, give up some manpower to help out on their outreach efforts. So I think what we have to figure out is whether or not this is something that's going to benefit the city of Villa Park. Currently, there's no other Orange County cities that are part of the coalition. So that's kind of where we're at. So thoughts on anyone?
Well, I had passed around a copy of the table of contents for the program that's proposed by the San Clemente of...
Yeah, we're talking about the coalition of the Taking Back Our Community Coalition. We're not talking about the...
That's what this is, Taking Back Our Community. And it has to do with... I talked to Amber Hughes down there, and she went over and sent me a copy of their outline of their program and how they've outlined
this. Is their volunteer policing program, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm confused, Wayne. I don't know how this relates to...
It all ties together. It all ties together. Perhaps I'm looking at the Taking Back Our Community Coalition of local governments,
right,
dedicated to public education and community advocacy surrounding the unintended adverse public safety,
right,
impacts of recent changes in California's criminal law.
Right.
Namely, just the ones you said, 109, 47, 57. Mm-hmm. And she sent this to me, and at this coalition of cities I talked that have gone together on this, I concluded, I guess we're talking same subject, but different approaches. But at any rate, I concluded that our crime statistics in this city have been improving, and I don't think it's worth the $1,500 we see. And you look at their worksheet or their, I'm trying to think of it, what do you call it, a book of, an outline of the activities that we should be doing and how we enforce them. And this involves, if you look down that list, there's a number of costly items. We'd have to add more personnel. And we're just too small a city for us to get involved in this. So, and like you said, there's no other cities in Orange County that are members. So I think they're trying to broaden this out to where we can be a political action group against the legislature to rescind some of the laws that have been causing the problem statewide. And I just feel that it's a great program. Good luck, you guys, but it isn't going to help our city specifically. And if we like $1,500, maybe we can afford another crossing guard or something.
Well, we do have other platforms to speak to these issues and help funnel stuff up to the state, which we attend and go to.
That's right.
We have League of Cities and other entities that we can use in lieu of this to help.
Well, I think I think there's another avenue, you're right, that's better than joining this coalition.
Any other thoughts? Did Tom, I know you were going to speak to the city of Arcadia. Did you ever?
I hadn't made any contact
with him yet. Eric, or anything with Sierra Madre? Did you ever talk with them at all?
Yeah, they actually called me back, and I don't know everyone who what they said, but okay. Specific. You know, it seems like a decent program. Costs some money.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that needs to get done somewhere.
Yeah. What about Duarte?
I didn't get a hold of Duarte. Okay. Actually, I called Duarte, but they didn't call me back.
Okay.
But I can actually. You know, they also have a. There's a sheriff station that has it. That contributed to it. They weren't really they're like an honorary contributor. I don't know, they just maybe mm-hmm. gave money. They don't really do anything back and forth. But, you know, I don't know, I didn't hear the first part of what Wayne was saying, but yeah. It's something that kind of needs to be done. Directly helping build a park, I don't know.
Well, isn't that what the city council, through the League of Cities,
right.
And they already got an organization that can address this.
Right.
Yeah, and then they also have, where all the city councils from all over get together. It's
ACCOC?
Yeah. It's
for Orange County and the yeah. cities of California.
Association.
I think they're supposed to do something with that too. And I don't know who directly gets the money with that other program. So
yeah.
Right. You'd have to track that down to find out if that's going to be worth the money from the city.
Right.
I think we need direction from our city council if they want this committee to do something.
If we were all unanimous saying, yeah, this is something we think would benefit the city, then we would collectively make a motion to send something to the city council for them to potentially take action to see to join the coalition. But I'm kind of in agreement with Wayne because I think number one, our crime stats don't indicate the need for the city. Number two, we already have a limited budget. It's another $1,500. We already have a limited city staff, and you know they're already very tasked. And the expectation of this coalition is for someone in our city staff to contribute to this coalition. So, I love what they're doing. I just don't necessarily think that we need to get involved at this point. Would be
can I throw my two cents in? It's not going to matter. They lower it to $700, $950, $1,500. Regardless of what it is, the court's already throwing people out anyways. So say it's $700, we arrest them. They're going to kick them out anyways. Mm-hmm. It's the overcrowding that's the issue.
Yeah.
So that's the bigger issue.
Right. So I guess as a committee, then we're going to move on from this. These are all things that I like about our committee is coming up with new ideas, looking at them, talking about them, talking to other people, doing research, and then collectively coming up with ideas and good or bad, and that's how we're going to continue to evolve. So, all right, so let's go to item D then. Transients, update actions taken on the Santa Ana River Trail. Lieutenant Puckett, do you want to tackle that one?
Well, I mean, this is a complicated issue, and as always, I will only speak about issues that affect Villa Park. I can assure you, Villa Park does not have a transient problem. Outside of what you see in the media, there's nothing else for me to comment on in regards to this, but I'm happy to take any questions.
I just would like to chime in. We had a resident call us about the reservoir and some issues down by Adams Ranch, and there was some, Deputy Benzie has been doing some hiking, so if he's wearing casual clothes, it's because he's hiking down in the river. In the reservoir, he has evicted 3-4 people that probably don't belong there on private property, or helped them find it, realize they don't belong there. On Friday, we were notified the fencing was down on Adams Ranch or whatever. We worked with the Water District. So between the Sheriff's Department and the Water District, the fencing is now repaired. Within 24 hours, the fencing was repaired, and personal trash belongings were removed from the area. So I just want to compliment the sheriff and the water district because they have done everything they can to assure that and shown that we're really not going to have we have residents or individuals who walk through the city, but you'll find that they keep walking, and we're fortunate that we have the kind of people that we do here from the sheriff's department. I really really mean that, because 24 hours later we had chain link fence all repaired, posts re-put in, everything done. And it was an easy access. If there's a vacant lot right at the end of Adams Ranch, it would walk right down. And that's been repaired. So I just thank you and the responsiveness of Brian Benzie to, you know, who actually told me he hiked those areas when he was a kid. So he knows that stuff like the back of his hand. But he went down there and he, you know, really went after it and showed me pictures of people who had tents and huts and things like that that were no longer with us.
And I appreciate you bringing that up. And as the group knows, obviously I'm not trying to be coy here, but I have to testify in federal court tomorrow. So if I'm candid with my answers, there's a reason for it. But what I can assure you, like I said from the very beginning, is Villa Park will never experience a transient problem. I will not tell you my operational plan in the forum, an open forum like this, but Villa Park will not have a transient issue.
Thank you. And then we are encouraging, and I would encourage you to, where you have problems or you identify that we have people that, you know, probably have services they need, well, we can help find those services for them. So just give us a call or call, you know, the call the Sheriff's Dispatch, call City Hall. We've got extremely responsive Sheriff's Department.
And I want to say thanks to the Sheriff's Department because they have done an outstanding job, and in particular Deputy Benzie and Steve for being on this, and Neighborhood Watch and our residents, because it's a group effort, and this committee, since its origins, we've had residents who are creating an environment that is less opportune for crime, whether it's petty theft or grand theft or what have you, and the joint efforts of all of us have created a place that I think is less advantageous for homelessness and or homeless criminal activity associated with those that are homeless, because homelessness in and of itself is not a crime, but it's a group effort. And I think as long as we continue to pass that word on and educate our residents to be careful and report things, you know what, it's a well-oiled machine, and we keep working together. Thank you.
Well, it's a really challenging issue because, you know, as soon as we think they got it figured, you know, the Sheriff's Department's got a plan and they're taking action and everything else, then a roadblock gets put in there. And it's just, you know, every time you come up with a good idea, someone's telling you it's not a good idea. So it's just a very, very difficult issue.
Hopefully common sense prevails.
Yeah, and fortunately, Villa Park's not being impacted, but, you know, when you're going to be kicking 3,000 people out of an area, then, you know, then we just need to be on guard that, you know.
What a tough job.
Yep.
Our heart's with you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, but there's nothing that's happened so far that we haven't planned for, and I'll leave it at that. And for the record, the census count is at 300 right now. So that's a better number to deal with than 3,000.
Absolutely.
Oh, on the riverbed?
300? Yeah.
Is that all by the old cinema right there behind the...
No, it's spread out between the 5 freeway and Taft.
Interesting drive down there to see what the challenge is.
Don't seen that.
Don't. All right. We'll move on to E, monthly crime stats, citations, traffic collisions.
So my apologies to the group. We weren't able to get our January stats compiled in time for the meeting, but I do have our year-end stats, and I'd like to talk about that. So as we talked about both at last city council and right now, crime is down. Part one crimes are down 19%. Now, granted, that number is interesting because crime is always low in Villa Park. So if you just move the needle by a few numbers, you come up with these large percentages. But for 2016, you had a total of 89 Part 1 crimes. And for 2017, you had a total of 75 Part 1 crimes. So going down the list, you had 0 murders, 0 robberies, 0 assault with a deadly weapons. You had 1 commercial burglary. You had 33 residential burglaries. But as we talked about, those were due to a significant spike in November when we had an issue of what we call swarming gangs from L.A. coming down to break into houses. But with the last one that we had, which I believe was on Thanksgiving, where the suspects were all killed, we noticed a significant decrease in that area. You had a total of 3 vehicle burglaries, 11 grand thefts, 19 petty thefts, 4 issues of vandalism, and 4 stolen cars for a grand total of 75. So we're quite happy with that number. It's one of the lowest on record for us. And I think our goal is to strive to maintain that number going into 2018. Outside of that, there's an issue here for response times and resident concerns. I have no comment on this, but I assume somebody else does.
Well, I had raised it at the city council meeting.
Okay.
Didn't you look at or read my comments at that time that I made the situation that happened?
I'm aware of the situation for your particular house, and if you'd like, we can speak outside of the meeting, mm-hmm. if you want on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but my concern was just, you know, with a minor in the home who reports an active intruder, someone trying to get in the house, why an 11-minute response time? So that was just my concern.
No, that's a pretty appropriate concern, and I actually have the details of your call. And again, we can talk about it later if you'd like, but for the Sheriff's Department, we look at two different types of calls, priority ones and priority twos. Priority ones are what we consider life and death situations, and those what we consider as acceptable response time is 5 minutes or less. And I can tell you for 2017, we are right in the mark at about 5 minutes and 20 seconds. For our priority two responses, which, and I think this is something that you may find interesting as your call was dispatched out, and I'd be more than happy to go through exactly what was said and who was there and everything else. Anything sub 12 minutes is what we would consider acceptable. Now, I will admit for 2017, there's some areas of improvement for the Sheriff's Department from Villa Park. We averaged about 17 minutes, which is outside of what I would consider acceptable. And so we're going to get the deputies back on track with that. For your house, for your particular call, we were there in just over 7 minutes from the time that the call was dispatched to being on scene.
So
and I think part of that's
from 911 to contact the Sheriff's Department?
Well, I'll go through the entire timeline on this with you afterwards. But I think maybe the way it was dispatched may have been an issue. So I'll show it to you, but I'm certain that you and I can find a solution to this, okay? But you're right in looking at the response times, and I think that's something we'll continue to address. And so the next one's traffic and parking enforcement.
I need to speak up. And Lieutenant Puck and I had a discussion, and I said, look, we've got limited resources. The first thing is I want to see the property, you know, property and personal safety is the number one priority for everybody. Then I've told him that moving violations are a second, you know, that's where I go. And I said, you know, then I'm going into parking, and that's candidly the direction he's received and his officers have received. So he's taking efforts to train his, make sure his officers are trained, like he mentioned earlier. But I do need to, when we talk about parking enforcement, some of it is because the city's giving him direct signals saying, look, parking isn't what, you know, if I've got one deputy, I don't need him writing a ticket and having somebody driving 65 down Taft Avenue or something. You know, we need priorities and those kinds of things. So I think that's, I want to make sure in his, before we, you know, put in context, if you will, the kind of direction he's been giving, and he's been doing that. So I do hear a lot of people saying, hey, there's a lot of non-ticketing, et cetera, but we don't, there's reasons that there are non-ticketing. And we've talked about those, and we've talked about some ways to increase enforcement for future contracts and how we can possibly do that. But I also want to share with him that it's not, I would not blame necessarily the sheriff entirely, because we shoulder most of the blame in giving him priorities. And if someone wants us to change priorities, I'm happy to do so. But I really do believe that's sort of the order that I think is the indication I've got from City Council.
And the budget that they have to work within, both, which is a constraint.
What was your call?
My call was my son was home, and there was someone, our pool pump was being worked on, which we weren't expecting anyone to be there. He called me, said that someone was trying to gain access to the house. I told him to call 911. I left Villa Park Elementary, ran home, addressed the whole situation, and really, I am pretty convinced at this point that someone was trying to gain access to the home. I think where my son saw someone and saw them trying to handle is not in the path of where our pool pump is. They don't go in that gate to get to our pool pump. There's no reason why an individual should have been outside that door. And it's a glass door, so he saw someone there. And there's no reason for it. So I think probably one of the guys who was there repairing the pool pump was probably looking for some sort of crime of opportunity, just, you know, pop in the door, maybe take a few things and leave, is what I think was probably happening.
Right. Did you want to do traffic and parking enforcement, or do you have anything to add more to that?
And like I said, I don't have the January numbers on that, okay. So unless there's further discussion on traffic and parking enforcement issues.
Okay, good enough. All right, move on to item F, community emergency response team CERT program, emergency response. This is a scanning agenda item.
No report on that. Still in progress.
Still in progress, okay.
Well, basically where we stand right now, as I mentioned at our last meeting, until we can figure out a way around the workers' comp issue, we have no CERT program. Can't do it.
Okay.
The fine to the city is $10,000 per day per person.
Right. Tom, I'm working on that. I'm working on
that program. That's not the federal. That's state of California.
I understand. Thank you.
Now, I did call to try to get a rough idea of what it would cost, and, unofficial quote, it wasn't that bad.
Thank you.
Bureaucracy. All right. Item G, Neighborhood Watch Program. Wayne,
you're up. One more comment?
Sure.
Speaking of CERT, I don't know if anybody's aware of it, the recent passing of Pete Moriarty, who was appointed at the same time I was as co-coordinators. I found out yesterday that he's passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He had a long-term battle with cancer. Yeah. He's a good man. He's a veteran. He's a great citizen. And a resident of Bell Park.
Neighborhood Watch. We have had very little activity. We have added numbers. We're up to almost 200. With the holidays and 2 weeks in January, we had 1 week long guests, house guests. The last ones were two-year-old and seven-year-old relatives from Spokane to get out of the cold weather. And we loved every minute with them, but we haven't really discussed the next step. We have scheduled a home security fair again at this committee's request. And we are forgotten the date on it. Just asking him, and he can't remember either.
It's on the calendar. But it's always reserved. I do know that much.
And I have
Mary,
one.
Mary did it with us, so she took care of it.
Yeah, she should be the representative. any rate, we have I have one computer and camera specialist that is already agreed to come again.
Excellent.
And ADT is going to will come again. The response was good, but we need to get more advertising on it. And also the Sheriff's Department's help to have the program. The best part of that was the deputy who went over the issues of home security and how to protect yourselves against a lot of it was cyber security. That's a big deal.
They had a rep from Economic Crimes last year, and they were a wealth of knowledge. So
it's just awful how much money is being lost by gullible people who believe what they hear from some guy on the phone telling them they owe money. It's amazing. I guess it comes with advanced age. So if we could get him back again, we had 60 people in the city hall listening to him. That was probably the most important thing.
Packed house.
So we'll work on that. So we're a couple months away.
Okay.
One other thing I brought it up the last city council. One of the things that thieves are doing today is they're going to the very first place they go to when they go in your backyard is go to your panel, open it up, and turn the power on.
Yeah, right. Shut your alarm off.
Yeah, I would suggest that we try to create notification for everybody in the city. A little lock on that, on your box, so that people can't open it to get through it.
Right.
I put one on mine recently.
There is the issue on that of if you have electric or a fire, the fire department wants access to be able to turn that thing off, control the power. And yes, if the fire department's equipped with a bolt cutter, but
I'm sure they will.
I'm just concerned about a resident having a small electrical fire, freaking out, going out to the panel, trying to open up the panel. Oh, where did that key go? And then there's a drawer full of 1,000 keys. So. It can cut both ways.
I would ask this because we've had this discussion before. We're going to talk about PSRs here in a second. I will tell you the Sheriff's Department's scope of practice for this is going to be extremely limited, but this seems something that would be appropriate for the PSR ranks. Where we talked about before, if we see crime sprees using the PSR groups to pass out flyers and verbally notify residents, right. If this was an avenue that LEAC wanted to pursue in terms of locking and talking about both the positives and the negatives, this would be an appropriate usage of the PSRs for the public notification, because typically with the city of Villa Park, like we discussed in the past, social networking is key for any community policing effort. Unfortunately, the people of Villa Park are resistant to computers. We have very robust platforms that we've very successful in their city for sending these messages out via Facebook, Nextdoor, and Twitter. Villa Park refuses to participate in these social platforms. So I think the PSRs would be an extremely beneficial resource to help get messages out like this, to partner with Neighborhood Watch, and to help keep the crimes low.
You know, as you speak, and as you just said, we could, through Neighborhood Watch, acquire those small one padlock for all of these power meters, and it would be the same key throughout the city if we could ask residents to put them on there. There'll be always a
20%. Who bears that cost?
Well, I don't think people. I think if we ask for a $5 donation at the home security fair and through our Neighborhood Watch program and say this is what we want to do to protect you, the citizen, I don't know, we'd have to see if it flies and how much it would really cost. If I put up $100, how many of those little locks could I get on a volume basis on Amazon? I don't think it'd be that much money. What do we got, 1,960 homes? Maybe that is a problem. But maybe that's a bad thing about brainstorming is I'm coming up with a volunteer idea that might backfire. Any rate, I like that input. You're right, PSRs would sure help.
Okay, so, and since we're talking about PSRs, let's segue into item H on the PSR program. Anyone got anything on that?
I'm not sure exactly who's managing that at this point, other than, has that been delegated to Mike Lee?
Mike Lee is in charge of the PSR program for the department. He reports directly through the Administrative Sergeant Troy Feely to me on that. The PSR program as it stands is its status quo. We have minimal participation. People have lives, you know, and there's only so many hours a day to volunteer.
We're still at four.
We're still at four, and they perform vacation checks as needed, but outside of that, the only other scope of practice that the Sheriff's Department is ever going to authorize would be like what we talked about, public notifications and assisting with Neighborhood Watch.
So outside of sight writing ability, Wayne, anything in your talks with San Clemente and their program, anything that came to light from any of those discussions that you think would benefit the city at all? Or
I think the main thing is awareness of lock your doors and your windows. That's the number one issue. I think your numbers are great, but I think we could have cut that down and almost in half. If you look back through those which were unlocked,
it's mostly unlocked
access.
And it's even if they could, and it's also even in your house. It's, you know, putting things away so that when someone, if they go around the back of the house, pull the drapes closed, or cause, let's face it, when they break in, it's because they see something they want, and that's when they're going to make the effort. If they don't see what they want to take, the chances are they're not going to, unless it's an inside job and they know what you already have inside, they're usually not going to make the effort to get into the house.
I just, no, I don't have anything more to add on at this point.
All right. Okay, so we'll move on to crime prevention and traffic safety. So there was a few items that we added on here that kind of came up during the last couple months. I know the one that I was asked to put on here was, and I don't really know the reasons behind it. I think Councilman Collicott had apparently gotten some residents that had mentioned this to him about speed bumps on Serrano Avenue. So
yeah, there was. We are doing a traffic study right now on Serrano. There's an issue of speed along traffic there, so we're doing a full-blown engineering traffic study. The other question is, should there be an additional stop sign there on, you know, there's a lot of possibilities, but that should be done. We should be finished with it, because you have to take a representative sampling over a certain time period. It's not like you do it one day and you're done. So this will be done by the end of February.
Yeah, speed bumps are and can also cause liability for the city as well.
Double-edged sword.
Yeah, and so I know those are concerns as well, but anyone else got anything on that one?
Do you guys do traffic calming, where you add, like, lane, like, out where you would park, and
yes,
slows people down?
You can see that on Taft Avenue, actually. You'll see where we changed
I think that's working fine.
So we're still working on that issue then, Steve?
Yes.
Okay.
To be continued.
Yeah.
All right. Lincoln and Wanda, crosswalk, discuss proposed relocation of crosswalk to provide additional...
This was actually, Eric brought this up last meeting, after the meeting maybe even.
Yeah, after.
But anyway, we've gone down, our traffic engineer is looking at this actually, and we are believe that we probably will end up doing this. It's a matter of, we have to deal with the cut, the way it's cut, and we have to put the dibbles on there. We have to do some things, but it might make sense. It might make sense. You know, I mean, we're looking at it from a perspective. Basically, if you're familiar with it.
So the only one going across now would be right at Wand and Villa Park Road?
Yeah, it's right on the main street.
Yeah, so you're thinking doing something about halfway down between...
No. It's literally the other side of the median has a crosswalk, a sidewalk. The other side of the median with 10 feet apart.
Yeah,
and it's ridiculous. So people are pulling onto a, moving pretty quickly, actually, off of Wanda and making a turn there. Whereas, and they have no time to react, whereas this would give them about 10 or 15 feet
to react. Literally, it's on a busy street when you can have it 20 feet, actually probably more than that, probably 30.
Can you draw that from that intersection? I'm not sure I understand. I live two blocks from it.
It's really interesting. The median actually has a walkway that goes either way. You can go either way. So this would, you know, the question is, do we take out the other crosswalk, or we probably have to do some adjustments?
So this is going to be Wanda, and then Catella, and this is Lincoln, but Lincoln goes, so this goes like this, and then you have Fetch and Ranch that goes right here.
Right.
Yeah. And then the Greenbelt, and goes like this. Well, the crosswalk's here, and then the crosswalk's here. And so what's happening is people just walk out on the street, especially in the morning when the school's all lit up.
The interesting thing is the primary walk is right, is up here, and it deviates to go out.
Right, so the sidewalk goes here on the other side of the wall, and then comes across here, and then goes here, and all the cutouts are all right here. This is just ridiculous.
So it's kind of an awkward, I'm not sure why or whatever, but...
Yeah, so the proposal is to move it
just
in.
Just to go like this.
Exactly. Right.
That's it, just to erase it. Mm-hmm. Because there's no, and especially at night. I mean, obviously we did a check, and there wasn't. I don't think there was anybody hit by a car, right?
No.
So there was nobody hit, but you know, just to erase a couple on, you know.
Luckily for you.
Why wait for speed to happen?
Because the sidewalk meanders from this point on down.
Yes. On the interior.
And that's why they picked that, is they thought of it from this side, but didn't think of the problem from the upside.
All right, so that's another to be continued.
We'll go through the traffic engineer, will deal with it.
Okay.
It's sharing that it's an idea that came up here in a committee that's probably... Right. Well suited, and it'll be implemented. So we'll name it the Eric Reynolds Crosswalk.
I didn't even notice it. No, I mean, it's just, you know, you're like, you know, we can. All we need is black paint. We're done.
Well, we have to, unfortunately, put dimples and things like that.
We do it tonight.
Yeah, we can.
We can
do it.
No one knows. No engineer. No engineer. Santiago and Taft.
Taft and Santiago. This is another one that Eric brought up. He's complaining about. Taft, Santiago, if you're going north on Santiago, turning east on Taft, you cannot turn on a red light there. Even when traffic westbound on Taft is turning southbound on Santiago. So the crosswalks are already impeded, so nobody should be using the crosswalks at those times, but it prohibits it. So that is a joint intersection, which the orange and we have responsibility for. So we're meeting with them because we'll have to resignal it. But that's something we're going to allow. We want to allow a right-hand turn
onto Taft,
eastbound Taft, during a allowable green light left turn from Taft.
So you have like a right arrow or something?
Yeah, right arrow.
Okay.
And that would have to be, it would only be about five or six cars. But if you notice, in the morning, Taft Avenue is backed up all the way to Bagleby. And this would move about five.
Even in the evening, that's a nightmare.
Move five cars through the intersection. So the engineer says there's absolutely no reason not to do it.
Yeah, sometimes you got to wait for two or three signal teams just to make a left turn to go.
You can't turn on red because there's
no. No, I know you can't turn on that red, but just that, just the part where it's turned left and no one can be in the crosswalk, no one can be going.
Right, there is absolutely no way. There's no traffic or whatever. It's just a matter of us working with Orange. Right now, we've done everything. We've got all our numbers and ready to show for them, and now we're just going to sit down with them and work it through.
Perfect.
All right.
That's all you get out of me for a whole year. Those two
very good suggestions, sir.
You can show up late for traffic.
I don't want to blindside anybody here, but as we wrap up here and we talk about traffic safety, the beginning of the year for me when I run an operation is always what I consider the cleanup month and set the direction for the upcoming year, right? And for me, this committee is no different. So I'm going to drop a suggestion that I just trust may be a conversational piece for 2018, because really I don't know if the funding would ever be prevalent for this, but in the close to 2 years that I've been the chief here in Villa Park, traffic has always been the number one concern. The crime rates have always been low. People move to Villa Park for a reason, because it's nice, it's friendly, and it's safe. Santa Ana's laughing at me because we go through zero murders, zero 245s, zero 211s. That's unheard of, right? Especially in a city that demands that there will not be one light turned on after 6 o'clock in the evening. Right? It's pitch black out there. So here we are talking about what are we going to do with this traffic issue that's plagued this city for numerous years with schools that the schools aren't going to go anyplace. And every school in the free world has traffic issues around it, particularly around the hours of drop-off and pickup, correct? We reviewed the contract model, which shows you have one deputy that can't be everywhere. And that deputy's primary goal is to keep that 19% reduction in place. One thing that I think may be bearing on this conversation for this committee is throughout the year to talk about the potential funding for a motor officer for the city. One dedicated traffic officer could work wonders with all of the issues that we're talking about. They can help with response times, they can help with traffic safety around the schools, they can help with parking issues.
I'm not buying you dinner again.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm blindsiding you here. But the reality is the city
isn't negotiating. We're negotiating for the contract here, and he's already...
But the city doesn't have funding for it, correct? Yet other cities have been able to pass bond measures for funding.
We don't know what the city has funding for until we see your contract.
Well, touche. Well played. My suggestion would be is you don't want to lose an SRO. Kids who are unsupervised have a tendency to get in trouble. We were all kids at one time. I know I certainly was no angel. My suggestion would be if you lost your SRO, you're going to see a spike in crime because kids are going to be unsupervised. We've already had problems in the shopping center and so on. So I'm talking about an addition on top of that. I've heard rumors that at some point in the history of Villa Park, there was an assigned motor officer here. I don't know why that position ever went away or how long that position was here, but my suggestion would be if traffic has been and will continue to be the prevalent issue, we have to do something about that. There's only so many volunteer hours we can put out there, but at some point the city's going to have to find funding to hire another deputy
for,
to specifically
for context,
deal with
is fairness, what does a full-time officer cost?
Thank you.
For the sheriff's department.
Quite a bit.
Thank you for beating me to that.
About $250,000.
Yeah, 1.2 is what we pay now.
We have a full budget of $3 million. That's the city. That's to cover everything. So I need to put it in context that there's a look.
Well, and just as a side note, I mean, I've had kids, you know, at the schools before we had our motorcycle officer, Steve. I don't know how many of you remember Steve.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, while he was there, and then after, and there was no difference. I mean, yes,
that's
he
important
wrote some
to know,
tickets,
though.
But I mean, really, as a parent,
so you're
going to
sit in negotiations with me, aren't you, Nicole?
Well, I'm just saying,
and I'm so sorry to bring it up and blind to everybody, but I feel
no,
just for conversational.
But yeah,
purposes.
As a parent in day-to-day drop-off and seeing what parents do, sure, I saw no difference.
Sure.
Just as an anecdotal
difference in traffic or.
Difference in parent behavior, I guess, is probably the best way to say it. Because I agree. I think the parent component is huge. Parents parking in the red. Parents, you know, illegal left turns, blocking crosswalks, you know, speeding, blocking traffic, you know.
Well, that motor cop does, in my opinion, with adding a motor cop, does a lot more than that, though, too. Response times are going to be insane because that motor cop's going to answer that call, be there before any radio car is going to be there, and then the radio car is going to follow behind and take care of it. And then he can go back to doing, you know, whatever.
I appreciate your comment, but I think it may be more anecdotal than empirical.
Yeah,
and I think you acknowledge that. Because we still see issues, but maybe the number of issues isn't as significant with that extra presence. And I think that is a very valid point, and that may address some of the response times, the response time issues. But $250,000 is tough to swallow. And not because it's not necessarily warranted for the service, but just when we're on a shoestring budget.
I would love to give you $250,000 if I had.
Most cities spend smaller cities spend at least half or more on
on police services.
What's our contract for? $2 million.
I'm sorry.
Our contract with you guys is $2 million, right?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what it is right now.
No.
It's
like 1.2. If it's 3 million total, then it
of our general fund,
that'd be 66%. Okay.
It's
because of the overall budget, it's 33%.
You're at just under 1.4.
Exactly.
Did you part-time on motor? Just shy of 50% then.
There's a problem with that because the motors are owned by the cities. And so if we share a motor with another city, then there's the issue of the insurance and the maintenance and all that because they'd be paying for all of it. So there would have to be reimbursements and all that.
We explore that option with you and Linda because they have three motors, but they're going through their own set of budget cuts right now. So I believe they're talking about going down to two, and they weren't open on the split cost because they want to keep most of the enforcement in their city. But we did explore that option.
I just like the nice walk right down the street pushing a stroller with two little kids.
Yeah, I mean, if in a perfect world, I'd like to see us get another deputy in the city, and we've talked about this before, how it could work, and we would have some overlap during those heavy times.
I meant to say that, the overlap.
Which would certainly help.
But their hours change at 5:30.
Options also, extra help deputies, but unfortunately the association, the union, doesn't want that simply because now we're taking away the funding for potential full-time deputy spot. We explored having deputies from other cities.
Talk about reserves?
No.
Oh.
I'm talking about you retire, but now we're going to hire you
back. 960?
Correct. We've also looked at the option of having motors from other cities come up on overtime. But unfortunately, like Jay was saying, the cities won't do that because that bike is maintained by that city. That's the only piece of equipment that city owns. And so if there's an accident or something like that, that city's out. So we got a lot of pushback on that idea as well, too. So the only other option we can come up with is the funding for a spot.
What about reserves?
We don't really have level one reserves that are motor trained.
No, I'm just in general. Mm-hmm. Just to be out and about.
We do use reserves out and about, but we're talking about specific traffic enforcement. None of our reserves are trained in traffic enforcement.
Unless you do a bond measure or some type of special assessment tax for the city, for the residents, that's the only way you're going to get the funding for.
And I realize that's probably going to create quite a bit of consternation in the city. But again, I just open it up for conversation, that's all. Because to me, this seems like the cure to all ills.
One of the issues is the residents haven't yet seen the bill for the school bond for the four high schools.
Right.
That's going to be a tough pill for a lot of folks to swallow. And then as I predicted, even prior to that bond passing, we're going to see bond 2.1, 2.2 for elementary and middle schools.
Right.
And not saying that there aren't needs, because there are certainly needs. It's just the question is, what can we afford? I mean, heck, we all want to drive luxury cars, but if our budget is for bargain basement Toyota, nothing against Toyota, I drive one. It is what it is. So I think it's a great suggestion. I think it's a discussion that we'll have to flesh out at the council level and with Steve and obviously revisit with you. But I think this is a good suggestion. I think it's something that we've kind of perhaps either directly or indirectly handled when I was the chair of this committee. And I think now John should definitely open the discussion up to the committee members, let them have a few cents on it. And if they have some advice to provide to the council, then we'll certainly listen. Because I'm not the only voice on the council when it comes to law enforcement. It's my expertise, but you know, there's bright people on the council, and I think everybody should have a voice and everybody should be listened to on that. And certainly a welcome having another law enforcement officer. By the way, you will not leave the room without my card. And I will find out where you live, and I will get your phone number because you might be volunteering in the near future, sir.
I have a point I wanted to make on that subject. Passing a bond issue in Villa Park, we've been bragging for 2 years now about how we've reduced our crime rate, and now we want to add an additional motor officer. That's confusing. Those are countercyclical, logically speaking. So that's something that would probably defeat a bond issue just for an additional sheriff patrol because they think we're safer. At least I hope they do. We've been working to get them to that. The other thing is that we have a... I'd forgotten it.
All right. We had a resident of the public, member of the public coming
to Serrano and Bryn Mawr, and I've been there since 1969. I wanted to say the restriping of Serrano has been excellent. I have not, I noticed with the schools, everybody knows where to go. I have not, in coming home, had to drive up on the sidewalk as I used to with the way the striping was, because you couldn't get by. Now we never have to, and I noticed they're pretty organized in dropping the kids off. The only thing that does happen, like you mentioned, when there is no school, there's occasionally a car that'll come 60, 70 miles an hour down Serrano, but that's usually when there's nobody else there. But I want to say a positive thing about the restriping has really made it
Very much better. We'd heard the striping did help some of the issues over there, so that's good to hear.
Thank you for your input. Thanks for coming to the meeting.
Well, it'd be nice to have it.
They
drop
tell me
off
I'm still the block captain. I wasn't sure you really had that officially.
Yeah, you're officially, unofficially official.
All right, so we'll go ahead and adjourn.
Before you do, can I ask a question? Are we liable, the city liable, for an accident that could occur by loading and unloading students in the street versus on site?
I don't know.
Potentially. I'm not a lawyer, but if it occurs on Bill Park, public property, you're gonna have anybody can sue anybody in the state of California. That's just how it is. But you're gonna have the school district probably involved in the lawsuit. You're gonna have
we'd all be named.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah, if something's serious, these attorneys have.
Yeah, it's a shotgun approach to litigation.
I just thought maybe the school district was kind of holding back, because if they put it on site, then they have the liability. So
I think it's just money. I think they'd rather put the money in different places.
Okay.
And they don't have enough money for their priorities.
Interesting.
All right, so we'll adjourn. So the next meeting will be in April. Second Monday's the 9th. Does that work for everyone?
Say that date again, John. I'm sorry.
April 9th.
April 9th.
Not my best night, but I'll make it work.
Do you have any conflicts, Steve, with that?
No.
City Council
at 6 o'clock?
Yeah. Do we want to do 6 or 6:30?
6.
All right. That's 6 o'clock for everyone.
7:30. I'll send out reminders.
All right.
It works for John.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.